Busy week that ended last night with the Calgary Stampeders victorious over the Toronto Argonauts. No undefeated teams remaining in the CFL. Stamps are 2-1. Weren't happy with the officials last night, according to Bo Levi Mitchell. 18 penalties he felt just too much for his team. Not sure he maybe watched all the plays afterwards. There was one missed call in the second half. We'll get to that. I don't think there's any debate on that, but man, there was a lot of dumb penalties taken, and offsides just continue to skyrocket in the CFL. And those to me are preventable fouls. When you have offside procedure, time count, too many when, stuff like that, like those are, you should be able to line up offside. You know where the line of scrimmage is before the play starts. That's pretty basic. And this year, already 65 offsides through 3 weeks of the season, which is just horrific. Huge increase from last year.
You know the big thing about the offsides? There have been four offensive offside penalties this year already. But, like, aren't these guys listening? Like, don't they know the count?
Yeah, that's...
I just don't understand that one at all. I mean, I can understand why a defensive player might charge into the neutral zone because he's anticipating and his testosterone's going and all of that. But offensive, man, oh, mister.
They are way up. Bud Steen, 30 years as an official in the CFL. Now he's the Western evaluator for the CFL. We want to start. We'll start with the Eskimo game because Eskimo fans, and I know the segment piques their interest because I'm getting a lot of tweets during the game about questions, which is great. And I've learned a lot through it, so sometimes I know the answer, sometimes I don't. There was a lot of confusion from Eskimo fans on the play against Ottawa because it's a new rule in the CFL where if you're a player, offensive or defense, and after a play, if you do the throw the flag motion with your hand, that's an automatic penalty now in the CFL, objectionable conduct.
That's correct.
Right? And so that happened in the game on Thursday night.
Correct. It was a play where an Ottawa player felt that there should have been a defensive pass interference called. The Ottawa coach felt so too, so he challenged the play. Replay official on viewing multiple angles provided by TSN agreed and imposed a defensive pass interference penalty. However, we've got an objectionable conduct penalty. So the objectionable conduct is a dead ball foul. It would be applied at the point of application for the other penalty. And so Ottawa gets the advantage of the pass interference, automatic first down, and the spot of the infraction back 10 yards, and now first down from there. Interestingly enough, we had exactly the same thing occur on Friday night in the Saskatchewan BC game, and same sort of situation. Penalty occurred in the goal area, so in that case, the replay official agreed that there should have been pass interference. When you have pass interference in goal, it's applied at the one-yard line. So the offensive team ended up getting a first down at the 11. Not sure what – I don't remember what the original line of scrimmage was, but they didn't gain a heck of a lot out of it. But they did get the automatic first down, which helped them. And they did go on to score a touchdown on that. Well, no, I'm sorry, they didn't. They were having red zone trouble for most of the night on Friday night, and so I believe they ended up with a field goal on it. But nonetheless, twice in two nights, and, you know, opinion seems to be all over the place that particular foul.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who feel that. Now, I'm guessing the reason why is because when players did that, a lot of times people felt like they were influencing the official, correct?
Not influencing.
Or trying to.
Showing up.
Showing up?
That's right. Frankly, what we're trying to introduce to the Canadian Football League is a bit of decorum on the parts of the players, and that's not an easy thing to do at times. And so essentially what we're saying to the players is don't show up the officials, don't show up the other players. There was an infraction on Thursday night in Edmonton where 45 tackles an Ottawa player and then exits the tackle by crawling over top of him. And sometimes in the game last night, one of the teams scored a touchdown. I don't remember which one now. One of the, not the scoring player, but one of the other players essentially walked over the man that had been covering the receiver that scored the touchdown. And that only means one thing. That is showing up the guy that's just been put down. And we want that out of the game. We want a little bit more professionalism on the part of the players.
The Dexter McCoyle penalty in Edmonton, though, can you be a little overzealous with it? Dexter McCoyle basically fell on top of the guy,
yep,
and was trying to get up fast because he's excited. And in the motion to get up fast, stepped on the guy where his padding is. And it clearly wasn't trying to step on him.
Right.
He's just trying to get up, and he got a flag for that. I do wonder at some point where it's like, well, hey, let's have them. We want these guys to bang the hell out of each other. But once the whistle blows, then we want them to be all perfect and tone down their emotions.
Cheerio. Let's have a cup of tea.
Yeah. I think it's a little excessive.
Well, it may be your opinion. I don't necessarily agree. I was asked what.
You thought that was a valid penalty?
I thought it was a valid penalty. McCoyle should have rolled off the man, not crawled over him.
Yeah, but his momentum, he was going for it already. So you're expecting to stop and then roll to the side?
Stop and roll. These guys are good. They could stop and roll.
How many times do you see a guy stop and roll off the pile?
As many times as he got up and jumped over top
that
of him.
That, to me, is a little over the top, I think. Where I have no problem with the officiating and the penalty. When I hear players complaining about it, 95% of their complaints are bogus. But I do think it's sometimes there are plays that are like, that's to me a little ticky-tacky. He didn't even stand, he didn't stop and showboat over the guy. Because when you hit the guy and then you stand over and stare down him for 5 seconds, to me that's grandstanding.
Right.
Right? You make a big play, you're getting up to celebrate with your guys fast, rather than thinking, well, geez, I better stop and roll here. I think that might be a little bit too much. Just me.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
The other concern, people want to know which penalties, when you're at the 5-yard line, are half the distance of the goal line, and which ones automatically put it at the one.
Which ones automatically penalty that's going to automatically put you in pass interference? Yeah, that's right, in the goal area. Whether it's accidental pass interference or not, in the goal area, you go to the one. Everything else is a restricted penalty, so anything inside the five is going to produce a first down, and the ball will end up on the one.
Now, whether people like it or not, especially in football, to some level, taunting's always kind of been part of it, right? Guys used to celebrate touchdowns. No one complained about it.
Let's go way back. Guys used to run into the end zone, drop the football, and walk back to the huddle.
Sure.
That's football. What's going on now is I'm better than you.
Society today is completely different than society 50 years ago. Shouldn't sports adapt with that?
Boy, you're getting philosophical
this afternoon. I'm just wondering.
Should we adapt? I suppose so, but then maybe officials need to carry guns.
Well, we're in Canada, buddy. We're not in the American Football League. We're in the CFL. Not everybody carries a gun, so I don't buy that one for a second.
Yeah. I believe that we can adjust behavior. I like to believe that humans are adaptable, and I understand what goes on the street, but that's not necessarily acceptable behavior for the majority of people. That's not how you're going to raise your family.
Oh, what are you talking about? We play video games. I'm taunting my brother all the time.
Nice.
Got to learn how to take it sometimes. Yeah. Question coming in from DH. Defense gets called for hands to the face a lot, but receivers rarely get it when they stiff arm a player to the head. What's the difference?
Because it specifically says in the rule book that the man carrying the ball can smack the opponent in the head. You can stiff arm if you've got the ball. You can't grab onto the face mask, but you can pop him in the chops.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Interesting. And normally, I mean, we see hands to the face both sides on the line of scrimmage, and we're seeing quite a bit of it this year. You've got different heights in there, and so if you have a fellow who's 6'4", 6'5", and he's up against a guy who's 5'10", chances are his hands at the normal level are going to be hitting the guy up in the face. And I used to, as a referee, ignore the initial pop. But if they start to leverage the guy's head and he's He's now getting his neck pushed back. He's now lost all traction. All he can do now is try to preserve himself. He is essentially out of the play. So there, that is advantage to the guy that's performing that illegal act. So, you know, that's the penalty, in my opinion.
Inside the Stripes with Bud Steen joins, presented by Mobile One. With the new illegal contact and receiver, that has been the one penalty that is clearly getting whistled way more than any. There's 30 of them so far through the first three. So basically you got 10 a week in four games, 2.5 per game. Now, Ottawa had a stretch in that first half. They had three consecutive, and they were all blatantly obvious to me. Is a memo going out? Like, are the players not understanding this? Why is that such a hard adjustment for the players when a lot of these DBs played that way in NCAA?
Frankly, I thought that there would be more than what we've seen. I'm not unhappy with the number of illegal contact infractions that have been called, and my expectation is that we're going to see that falling off fairly quickly. I don't think a memo is necessary. 15 minutes in the film room, especially with the rest of your mates on that side of the ball, and I'm not so sure that the offending players are going to do it again.
So then what do you make of the offside? Because that's not a new rule, and it is skyrocketing this year.
You know, I'm not so sure. There may be a...
Are you guys calling it? Is there anything different?
Nothing different.
Okay.
Nothing at all. In fact, truth be known, this past weekend, we missed three. We had three situations where the defense had hands inside the neutral zone, should have been called, wasn't flagged. So there could be even more than what we're seeing.
So then it's defensive players. So the line of scrimmage, let's just use the 55 because it's pretty easy. Everyone can visualize it at midfield. So the defender gets down. So if the ball's at the 55, he has to have his hands on the defensive side of the 54-yard line.
That's correct.
What is the... If he's a fingernail over, like what's the ruling on that?
At the 55-yard line, he can have a fingernail over. At the goal line, he can't. Because at the 55, it really doesn't matter all that much to that particular play. Now, caveat, if it's third down on the 55-yard line, we want the defense to give 36 full inches.
So are they, are people... Well, 36 inches, wouldn't that be 3 feet? I mean, 12 inches, right? Foot is 12. Oh, yeah, yard.
Yard.
Yeah, okay. So when they line up, if you see a guy's hand and it's over by an inch, do the referees yell, 93, get your hands back?
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of times they're even given a warning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's lots of communication going on out there, and you'll see in many cases an offensive player who's split wide out or something, he'll come up and he'll look for the official. Just so that listeners are aware, the official will put his back foot on the line of scrimmage and his front foot will be a yard across the line of scrimmage. So he will point to the one foot that is on the line of scrimmage so that the receiver can see that and the receiver that can then triangulate and figure out where he should be standing. He won't be offside. In some cases, he'll back the receiver up. We'll generally not tell a receiver to move forward because that receiver may not be on the line of scrimmage in that particular play, but they will move the guys back if they're too far up.
So when you go over and you're watching the replays, are the defense just too often lined? Like, is it a little bit or are guys lining up 5 inches offside?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Is it blatant?
Yeah, it's blatant. It's blatant. And, you know, in some cases, they're coming down late. So if we've not made the call, or if both sideline officials have not made the call, it could be that one of them is shielded from the call because he has a slot back or somebody that he's watching carefully as he comes up to the line to make sure that he's not offside. In some cases, other bodies get in the way and he can't see that hand 45 yards away from him. But we're hopeful that we're going to catch that. But I mean, we're going to give some degree of latitude on that. We're not going to be picking nits if we can help it.
I know there was a lot of people wondering if the offense, the receivers are trying to get a little bit more of a jump because they're like, well, once I want to get off the guy quicker because I got to come off the line faster because I know the guys are going to be more aggressive jamming me now because they can't jam me after 5 yards. Right, have we seen an increase in receiver offsides this year?
We have, but generally they're so far offside. There was one Toronto player last night God, he had to be 5 yards across the line of scrimmage, and the quarterback was still in his snap count. So I'm not really really sure why. Certainly, the receivers are challenging the line more this year than they have in the past. They are charging the line much harder than they have in the past. They're coming at it full tilt now.
And this past week, just this week alone, there was 8 procedure calls, which, you know, 2 a game. But it includes 3 of them for no end.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Good question. I would suggest, I mean, the one that comes to mind was in the BC game in overtime. And I think it was Saskatchewan sent, or it was, anyway, late in the game, and the offense sent in its big guys. I'm starting to use officiating lingo. A coach can designate 2 players who have ineligible numbers. They're mm-hmm. wearing sweaters with either a 50 or a 60 on them. He can designate them before the game as being legal to play in an eligible position, so tight end.
Sure.
So they get these big guys that can help block, and every once in a while they'll slide a big guy out.
And they'll be an eligible receiver.
And he catches a pass, and he's a hero. So in the BC game, Buddy forgot to report. And the rule says if you're coming in to play that position, you have to tell the referee every play that you're playing in that position. You got to go so if it's a series of 2 or 3 plays in a row, every time you got to go back to the ref, say, "All right, I'm 55, I'm in again." The referee then gets on RefCom, tells the rest of the guys, 55
is an eligible receiver.
That's right. And before the game, so let's say the coach gave you 55 and 58. So 55 is number 1, 58 is number 2 because he's the higher number. So the ref would say number 1 in eligible. Or if they're both in, both guys in. And now everybody knows the line of scrimmage official sees 55 lined up at end. He's not going to throw his flag. That one, unfortunately, it cost the line of scrimmage guy 2 points because he didn't flag it and the ref did.
Just by seeing the number, and because he had, and you have to say it to the referee,
yes,
not the line judge.
That is correct. Yeah, you got to report to the referee. And
does that happen often where guys just forget to report?
Yep. Yeah, 2-3 times a year.
Continue on Inside the Stripes with Bud Steen, 30 years as an official, now the Western evaluator in the CFL. And we were talking, there's a lot of people wondering, in the regards to Ottawa in the second half, when they got flagged for the team bench objectionable conduct, it was simply because they had a coach on the field?
The team is responsible to stay off the field. It's just that simple. In fact, no one is supposed to be within 3 feet of
But that's never.
That's right. That's never. And it puts our guys in a very perilous position sometimes. They get trapped, they can't get out of the way, and they get run into. In this particular case, a coach was trying to assist on a play by informing everyone in the stadium, including the officials, that there was an incomplete pass, and he just happened to be 4 or 5 steps out onto the field. And so the official did as he's been instructed, and that was flag him.
And, you know, it's late in the game, and it's like anything. The emotions run high, and I'm sure as an official you have to balance that out. I was looking at the penalties. Ottawa had the first 7 penalties of the game, if you recall, in the first quarter. The Eskimos didn't take a penalty in the first quarter on Thursday night. Then the Eskimos had a few, then Ottawa again. In the second half, though, Ottawa only had 2 penalties. One of them, of course, was the objectionable conduct for Ernest Jackson. The other one was objectionable conduct against their head coach. And you've officiated, Bud, and when games are blowouts, do you just try to get out of the, just finish the game up? And if there's like a holding call or something that could be holding, and the game is a 30-point advantage with 15 to go, are they let go sometimes?
Yes. Yeah, it's that simple. What an official has to do is balance in his own mind how obvious things are to the world. So, for example, if a defensive player is charging in and is clearly offside on a play, then you're not going to be able to ignore that because everybody has seen that. But a hold, lots of people will say there's holding on every play. Holding is not in and of itself illegal. There's a legal way to hold. And
you're allowed to hold in between the shoulders, and you can grab onto the jersey as long as you do not spin or turn the player.
Essentially, yeah. You can grasp your opponent as long as you're doing so inside the frame of your body, and you don't extend your arms outside the frame of your body. There's lots of times I let lots of holding go because nobody wanted this piece of you-know-what to drag on any longer than it was going to.
Last night in Calgary and today at Eskimo practice, funny enough, we saw Eddie Steele taking some reps on the offensive line, likely because, hey, they've had some injuries already in the offensive line. Greg White's out for maybe up to 8 or 10 weeks, depending on how his concussion heals. At this point for the Edmonton Eskimos, might see Brian Ramsey back in camp sooner than later, just because there's no depth for Canadian O-linemen right now. But Calgary last night, due to a string of injuries, had to put a defensive lineman line up as an offensive lineman, which is a major challenge to do just because of the play calling. And if all of a sudden the center is audible and, okay, they're blitzing from the left side and you don't necessarily know what the call is, you could really get screwed up and your star quarterback could end up just getting smashed in the mouth because you miss a block. When you see a defensive player playing a position he's not used to, how do you adjust as an official?
I don't. He's there. He's the guard. So play guard.
But would you naturally watch him thinking, okay, this guy might hold because he's a defensive player?
You know, there were a few people who we would watch a little bit more carefully than others because we were very aware that they were good for 3 or 4 a game. We'd try to get those 3 or 4 out of our system early so he knew that we were watching him carefully and then just carry on from there. But, I mean, generally speaking, these fellows aren't out to create infractions. You have too many penalties and you're not going to be in this league very long, especially now because there's such a depth of talent. Maybe not lots and lots of Canadians who can play on the offensive line, but there's lots of good ball players now. So you've got to perform, not take stupid penalties, not cost your team because of your personal actions. So guys are very careful.
We got a lot of texts from, I'm guessing, guys who are defensive players or fans of defense, suggesting that offensive pass interference isn't called as closely or as tight as defensive pass interference.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I did see at least one on the weekend that should have been called where, and I forget which game it was because I've watched so many of them this weekend, but the receiver went and needed more room, and the defensive player recognized that the ball was going deep, and so he just slowed up, and the offensive player kind of gave him a shove so that perhaps he could get him out of the way and then get past him to get to the ball. Wasn't called, should have been. We're watching. There is not supposed to be really much. Other than incidental contact between those two gentlemen as that ball is coming in,
pushing off, I think from the vantage point of the press box or the stadium seats, will look a lot different than it actually looks on the field.
You bet.
Right, like pushing off of a receiver. Like a lot of times you see the DBs and the guy breaks off and his hand's on the DB, and so the DB claims he pushed off of him. But really, there was no extension of the arm. Are there guidelines on what you guys are taught to look at as far as pushing off from an offensive receiver to a defensive player?
Well, what we talk about between ourselves is that the hand on the other body is not in and of itself a penalty. Generally speaking, all of that player is doing is marking the other guy. That is to say, he's saying to himself, okay, here's where my opponent is. And then he can keep his hand there and then turn and pull that hand away and catch the football. And that's very, very common. There are some who made careers, though, out of very subtle pushing off. I know one member of this ball club in the Hall of Fame who was not a very large man but was a phenomenal receiver.
Brian Kelly.
Boy, he was good. I mean, he
good at hiding, disguising how to push off.
Yes. His hands would be in low, and the next thing you know, he's bought himself 1.5 to 2 feet of separation, and you just never saw it coming.
It'll be interesting. Now we're entering week four. In your experience in the past, do the players, because we saw a drop in penalties from 29 down to 26 this week, which, you know, fairly significant drop in 1 week, and likely will drop back down again and maybe get to more regular levels of 21, 22, 23?
Well, I'd like to see 20s, actually. I think that we can get to 20 fairly quickly once the teams settle in on their rhythms, on their snap counts, once they've practiced more so that there's less procedure and less offsides. So I can see 20s happening fairly quickly. However, as we get closer to Labor Day, the intensity goes up, and then who knows what's going to happen, because you're going to have guys that are out there trying to make statements, physical statements, and that can be a problem.
Last week in the CFL, 9 illegal contacts and receivers. So basically just 2 per game. When you think about that, that's not really a lot. When you think 1 for each team, arguably, is illegal contact and receivers. That's not a major one. Holding significantly, there was an average of 5 per game in the CFL. That's a big one. And still, offsides, number 2, followed by procedures and unnecessary roughness.
You know, you're not going to take UR out of the ball game. It's a very physical game, and sometimes you're just a couple of inches away. You can legally do something. You can legally grab a guy's sweater and pull him to the ground as long as you grab his number. But if you get up onto the nameplate and yank him back and down, that's a horse collar. You get your hand inside his gear up around the neck area in the back, that's a horse collar. All you have to do is close your fingers on his face mask, that's a 15-yard penalty. As an official, I can understand many URs. There's a few that I really don't like. Tourist hits, we call them tourist hits, but that's a situation where a player has essentially given up on a particular play. You can see it when you're watching film. His shoulders go down, he slows down, and he's no longer engaged in the action of the play. And somebody
headhunting, basically.
Yeah, headhunting. Somebody comes in and takes
a
shot.
So it's called tourist?
Yeah, tourist hit.
Huh. I did not know that. That one's rarely called.
Well,
does it announce
that's right.
as a tourist hit?
No.
Okay, that's why. Okay, I was going to say, I've never heard of that one, right. But okay.